Okay. Boker Tov, everybody. A pleasure to see everybody. We hope you can stay for as much as the day as you can. Really, we're looking forward to a very inspiring day. And we hope our learning will be a salute for the soldiers of Israel, of course, the hostages who are still in Gaza, the people of Israel and Jews around the world. And we should hear good news and peace for the Jewish people and the world at large. This first lecture this morning by Dr. Aaron Kohler, professor of Near Eastern Studies at Yeshiva University, is sponsored by Sandy Welkis in observance on the first day of Hanukkah, appropriately, the 10th Yortzeit of her husband, Gronin Tzvi ben Shmuel Elyakim Zatzal, and his family should have good memories, and we should come together for happy occasions. And thank you very much. And Bakasha, Dr. Kohler, 29 minutes left. Let's go.
Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. It's good to see everyone. Well, I guess good to see the people whose cameras are on. Good to see the names of the rest of you. This morning, we're going to spend a bit of time on one of the more famous passages in the Talmud about Hanukkah, because it's the basis of much of the halacha that we wind up dealing with on Hanukkah. And that's the Braita on the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. So I'm going to share my screen. These are also the sources that have been posted, so you should access it however you'd like. This is the Braita on Shabbat Kaf Aleph Amud Bet, and we'll unpack parts of it, but let me first read the entire thing. Tinur Rabbanan, Mitzvat Chanukah Ner Ishu Veito, VeHaMehadrin Ner L'chol Echad VeEchad, VeHaMehadrin Mina Mehadrin, Beit Shammai Omrim, Yom Rishon Madlik Shmonah, Mikan Ve'elach Pochet Ve'olech, Beit Hillel Omrim, Yom Rishon Madlik Achat, Mikan Ve'elach Mosif Ve'olech. And even at a first pass, there's a number of oddities about the Braita. We don't usually have built into halachot three levels of options as to how you're going to fulfill a mitzvah. There's also a more textual historical oddity that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are usually the fundamental sources of our halakha. Some of the earliest people discussing the basics of halakha, rarely are they involved in a secondary level, or in this case, even a tertiary level. And this has been the subject of a number of studies recently, and you have a little bit of bibliography. If anyone wants these, I didn't include the articles in the sources, it would have overloaded the screens. But if anyone wants any of these articles, please feel free to email me, and I'm happy to send you PDFs of these really interesting articles that are both textual and historical and ideological. And we're going to do a little bit of text, a little bit of halakha, and a little bit of hashkafa with regard to this braita today. So, of course, the topic that we're going to revolve around is this question of mehadrin. What is this mehadrin? What is the word? And the sort of tempting first understanding is to link it with the concept of hidur mitzvah. Hidur mitzvah, Hebrew word lehader, which we have in a number of places already in Tanakh, to be beautiful, the noun beauty. And so mehadrin would be a verb meaning to beautify. And we do have this concept of hidur mitzvah, of beautifying the mitzvot. But a number of achronim and even some of the rishonim seem to have been attuned to the fact that this doesn't quite match our normal definitions of hidur mitzvah, partly for technical reasons, partly for more global reasons. So on a technical level, hidur mitzvah has some basic rules about it. One of them is that hidur mitzvah does not demand, does not ask that anyone spend more than a third of the value of the mitzvah itself on beautifying the mitzvah. So you have this explicitly in Bava Kama, Daf Tet Amud Aleph Amud Bet, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Huna, B'mitzvah ad shalish. My shalish, ilei mashlish beito, right? If you say, oh, you have to spend up to a third of your estate to fulfill a mitzvah, so Gemara points out that's absurd, right? Ela me'ata, it rami le'tzlata mitzvata le'tiv l'kulei beitei. So then three mitzvot come along today, and that's it. I'm bankrupt. So that's crazy. That's obviously not what it means, b'mitzvah ad shalish. Ela amar Rabbi Zeira bihidur mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah. So the Gemara explains what Rabbi Zeira meant, saying that to beautify the mitzvah, hidur mitzvah, could ask no more of you than one third of the value of the mitzvah itself. The Gemara then goes on to say, well, is that shlish milibar, shmish milago? In other words, is that a third, 33% or 25%? this is irrelevant for our purposes because, of course, when you think about Mahadrin and Ner Hanukkah, we're talking about 800% off the bat, right? So one candle would be the basic mitzvah, but if you're going to do, if you're going to go Mahadrin, and we'll see some variations on what exactly that means, but you're going to wind up with 8 candles rather than 1 candle, this is obviously more than a third, no matter how you calculate a third. I wanted to include this, even though it's not relevant for our point, which is that the Gemara, this is the Bavli, of course, explains, quotes people in Eretz Israel, the Ma'arava, that actually say that Rabbi Zera was only saying that you will lose only a third, but actually, above and beyond that, God will contribute. We'll set that part aside for now. So that's one technicality. It's hard to associate our Breita with Hidur Mitzvah, since our Breita violates the basic rules of Hidur Mitzvah. There's a more conceptual mismatch here between Hidur Mitzvah and our Breita as well. And this was brought out by a couple of Achronim, especially Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, the Griz. That's Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik's uncle, the Brisker Rav, Velvel, whatever, goes by lots of names. Man of many identities, but actually a very, very simple worldview. But the Griz pointed out that there's an aspect of Hidur Mitzvah that's not explicit anywhere, but seems to be implicit in a number of texts. The source text for Hidur Mitzvah is this Gemara in Shabbat, Kuflam Gimel Amud Bet, Tanya, Ze Elivan Vehu, so that Pasuk in Shirat Hayam, which the Pshat may or may not have anything to do with making things beautiful, but Ze Elivan Vehu, Hitna'e Lefanav V'mitzvot. Be beautiful before him, capital H, with mitzvot. What does that mean? Says the Breita again, Tanya. Asei sukana'a, vilulavna'e, v'shofarna'e, tzitzitna'a, sefer torana'e, lishmo, bedyona'e, bekulmosna'e, belivlar oman, bekorcho b'shirayina'in. So all of these things that you do, all of these cheftzas of mitzvah, right? The sukkah itself, the lulav, the shofar, the tzitzit, the sefer Torah, should all be done beautifully. The object should physically be beautiful. It should be done, so that's some of them, right? The lulav na'eh should just be a beautiful lulav. Interesting that we, the one place that this comes up probably most often in the typical consciousness is etrog, but the writer here actually talks about lulav rather than etrog. And not only should the physical object be beautiful, but it should be done with a professional scribe, a livlar oman, livlar, which is in the Mishnah already, comes from the Latin, related to the word library. So professional scribe, a beautiful pen. These are things that you may or may not actually see, but it should be done as beautifully as possible. But what Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik pointed out is that these are all things related to the object itself. Right? Nothing here says you should have 2 shofarot. You should multiply the mitzvah. It's that when you do the mitzvah should be done in a beautiful way. This is what he called the gufo shel mitzvah. The mitzvah itself is done beautifully. And he drew attention to the Rambam's understanding of how Mahadrin and Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin works. So we're not going to have time to go through all of the views. It's a really interesting sugya, I'm sure familiar to many of you, of calculating what exactly Mahadrin and then Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin actually means in practice. So we actually do not follow the Rambam's view. We follow some sort of hybrid view that we won't worry about right now. But let's read the Rambam. This is in Hilchot Megillah v'Chanukah, the beginning of Perek Dalet. So the first 2 prakim are about Megillah, the second 2 prakim are about Chanukah. So beginning of Perek Dalet, we get to the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Kama nerotu madlik b'Chanukah? Mitzvata. So this is the basic mitzvah. Every house should have 1 candle. Doesn't matter how many people there are. Doesn't matter which night there it is. Every house has 1 candle. The hamahader et hamitzvah madlik nerot kiminyan anshei habayit. Ner lechol echad ve'echad. Ben anashim, ben nashim. His language is a bit ambiguous, so we'll just translate it very literally. He'll give us more details in a second. One who glorifies the mitzvah, lights candles according to the number of people in the household, a candle for each person, doesn't matter the gender of the person. V'hamahader yoter al zeh, v'oseh mitzvah min hamuvchar, madlik ner l'chol echad ve'echad b'layla harishon, u'mosif v'holech b'chol layla v'layla echad. One who glorifies it even more, beautifies it even more, and does an extraordinary mitzvah, the best of all the mitzvot, lights one candle, or comes out a candle for each person on the first night, and then increases on every night. What does that all mean arithmetically? So he now explains. Kitzad, harei shayu anshei habayit asara, balayla harishon madlik asara neirot. So if there are 10 people in the household, the first night of 10 candles. Uvelel sheni esrim, uvelel shlishi shloshim, ad shenimtza madlik belel shmini shmonim. So the first night would have 10, if there are 10 people in the household. Second night, 20, 30, 40, up to the last night, 80. But the Brisker Rav says, who's lighting these? It's very clear in the Rambam that this is not each person lighting their own. But we go back to the previous line. Mitzvah min mevchar, madlik ner l'chol echad ve'echad b'layla harishon. So one person is lighting 10 candles on the first night, 20 on the second night, 30, and so on. The Rambam, just to finish up his own description of the halachot, and then I want to come back to this point about the one person lighting. Minhag pashut b'chol arenu b'sfarad. So even though he's not in Spain anymore, he says the widespread practice in all of our cities in Spain. Shiyu kol anshei habayit madlikin ner echad b'layla harishon, mosifin v'hochin ner b'chol layla v'layla. Ad shenimtza madlik b'layla shmini, shmona neirot, ben shayu anshei habayit merubin, ben shaya adam echad. This is the widespread practice in Spain is actually not to do this. Mahadrin min mahadrin, or what he called here mitzvah min amuvchar, mahader yoter azeh. But instead, that everyone lights one candle on the first night, so everyone together lights one candle, up to 8 candles on the eighth night. All right, well, let's put the minhag pashut aside and go back to the point that even in the mahadrin min mahadrin, the mitzvah min amuvchar, it's only one person lighting. The Brisker Rav, in this piece that you have on the third page of the source sheets, which we won't read together because Rabbi Kelman cruelly took away all my time and said, man, I'm not allowed to read this whole thing. The Brisker Rav says, well, this actually makes sense. Because if you think about Hidur Mitzvah, the Hidur Mitzvah only works within the Mitzvah itself. It has to be part of the Gufo Shel Mitzvah. But if you light a menorah, you've lit 3 candles on the third night, and then I light 3 candles on the third night, I'm not doing Hidur Mitzvah. I'm not doing anything at all. Hidur Mitzvah has to be part of the Mitzvah itself. Do the Mitzvah beautifully. But if you've already fulfilled the Mitzvah, then my additional menorah is not Hidur Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is not something additional to the Mitzvah. It's within the Mitzvah itself. And he points to another case that we don't have time to spend a lot of time on, but a case with regard to Brit Milah, which the Gemara in Shabbat talks about. This is actually the Sugya and Kuflam Gimel there.
I'm getting tired looking at all your walking.
The Gemara talks about tzitzin hameakvin and tzitzin she'enan meakvin in brit milah. So these are parts, pieces of skin that may or may not be removed. And the Gemara says it's hidur mitzvah to remove them. The Gemara asks, well, what if you finish brit milah? Do you go back and remove these tzitzin she'enan meakvin? One need not remove them. But would you go back and do it? Rashi understands the question to be, do you go back and do it on Shabbat? It's not Shabbat. Of course, go back and do it. Like, why wouldn't you go back and do it? It's better. But the Rambam understands that you don't go back and do it even if it's a Tuesday. Even on Tuesday, you don't go back and do it. And the Brisker Rav says that the reason you don't go back and do it is because it's no longer Hidur Mitzvah. You finish the Mitzvah. Once you finish the Mitzvah, there's no point in going back and doing Tzitzin She'enan Me'akvin. The Mitzvah is over. Hidur Mitzvah only works within the Mitzvah itself. Not something additional to the mitzvah. If we come back to Ner Chanukah, this seems like a very good point. That might in fact be why the Rambam describes Hidur Mitzvah as happening within one person's lighting. So one person lights on behalf of everyone else. It can't be that each person lights a menorah, because once the one person is lit, the next person is not doing Hidur Mitzvah. They're just doing something that is superfluous entirely. But we should observe, we don't do that. Right? Most of us, actually each person lights the menorah, and this is already in other views in the Rishonim. And so we seem to not be all that concerned about this detail. Now, I'd suggest that the reason we're not concerned about this is because this is not normal Hidur mitzvah. This is something different. We'll come back to in a second what this is, but something different entirely. It's not Hidur mitzvah, which would in fact be limited to Gufo shel mitzvah, but this is something different. So, you know, growing up, my dad would light the menorah, and then my mom would light the menorah, and then I'm the oldest kid, so I got to light the menorah, then my brother, my sister, we all light the menorah, and we consider this as Hidur mitzvah. But if we're limiting Hidur mitzvah to Gufo shel mitzvah, then that actually doesn't work. So what is happening here? So remember, the basic point is that this doesn't seem to accord with our normal rules of Hidur mitzvah, right? It's much more than a third, no matter how you calculate a third. It's outside of Gufo shel mitzvah. So what is going on? How could this possibly be Hidur mitzvah? So Rashi, actually, as Kedarko, solves this problem with one word. Rashi, this is a commentary on that Baraita, the Mahadrin, listen to what Rashi says, Mahadrin achar ha-mitzvot, osin ner echad, b'chol layla l'chol echad v'echad mibnei ha-bayit. Mahadrin achar ha-mitzvot. Now, if you had asked me what word should come after mehader, right? Because notice the Braita didn't say anything after mehader, it just said mehadrin, colon, right? There was no preposition there. What word should come after it? Well, the Rambam actually said mehader et ha-mitzvah. You're beautifying the mitzvah. What's mehadrin achar ha-mitzvot? Well, if you're sort of thinking about the language here, mehadrin achar ha-mitzvot, especially if you're just reading the sugyot about Hanukkah, you're like, I know that phrase. But what is mehader achar something? That's equivalent of Hebrew mechazer achar something, right? Because hey dalet resh in Aramaic is equivalent to chet zayin resh in Hebrew. What is mehader achar something or mechazer achar something? To chase something. In fact, we actually have that elsewhere in the sugya. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kol shmanim kulan yafin laner, v'shem etzayit min ha-muvchar. Yeshua ben Levi is quoted as saying that Shem and Zayit is the best. Amar Abaye Meresh Hava Mahadar Mar Amishcha Deshum Shemei. I used to be Mahadar, right? Same word. After sesame oil. Amar Hai Meshach No Re Tvei. Because I said this actually draws the light best. Sesame oil burns the best. Kevan Deshemala Mahadar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mahadar Amishcha Dezeta. But once I heard Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's statement, I was Mahadar after olive oil, because Rabbi Shua ben Levi said so. Amar hait salil nohore tfei. So this is maybe not burn the best, but it's the purest light. Interesting about sesame oil and olive oil, but right now I'm actually interested just in the language. Mahadar amishcha deshum shemei. And that's what Rashi is saying. Mahadar achar hamitzvot. So in that one word, what Rashi's doing is actually severing this from hidur mitzvah. He's saying, this is not hidur mitzvah. You're not mahadar et hamitzvah. You're mechazer achar hamitzvah. You're chasing mitzvot. Oh, that's a whole different ballgame then. I'm not glorifying the mitzvah. This is not part of the sugya and Shabbat Kuflam and Gimel. I don't have to worry about the shlish of Bava Kama Tet. Here I'm mechazer achar mitzvot. I'm chasing mitzvot. So what's the Braita saying? The Braita is saying, you want to do the mitzvah? One candle. You want to chase mitzvot? More candles. You want to chase mitzvot even more? Here's how you do it even more. And there are halachic implications for this. On the last page, I gave you excerpts from a tshuva, Rabbi Akiva Eger, who's asked the very interesting question of, well, what happens, going back to my household, what happens if, for some reason, the first menorah, my dad lit the menorah, and didn't make the bracha. So can my mom make the bracha on the second menorah lit? Right now it's the second menorah. It's Hidur mitzvah. Can I make the bracha on Hidur mitzvah? And Rabbi Akiva Eger struggles with this a bit, concludes that absolutely you do make the bracha. He tries to be mitzaref a number of different reasons for why this is true. But I think according to Rashi's explanation of this, the whole question changes its form. Rabbi Akiva Eger is certainly right. You would make a bracha because it's not hidur mitzvah. This is not something superfluous, not extra, extraneous on top of the mitzvah. This is part of the mitzvah. In Hanukkah, there's a special understanding of the mitzvah, that there are different levels of doing the mitzvah, not hidur mitzvah, not I do the mitzvah or I could do it better, but I do the mitzvah or I could do it more. I'm mechazer achara mitzvot. So I think in that explanation, you come to the same conclusion of Rabbi Akiva Eger, who actually, again, sort of winds up putting three different considerations together to explain. You actually have a summary at the very end there. So if you want to just look at it quickly, even though I'm running out of time. But Tziruf Hanisvirot Aleph. Da'at Eliyahu Rabbah the Mevarech al Hidur. Bet. Kirin the Mekrei Shihut Sheyaveh Mitzvah. Mashachad Lagatam. Yes, the Mekrei Over Lasiatan. And Gimel Da'at Poskim Im Lober, meaning that the candles have to burn. So maybe it's Lober Lasiatan. And Gimel Da'at Poskim Im Lober Recha Ber Lasiatan. Mevarech Acharkach Mikol Zeh Nirat Lismoch When Yod Didan Divarech. But we say, I think it's easier. Of course you're Mevarech, because you're still doing the Mitzvah. That second menorah, the third menorah, the fourth menorah, these are actually all part of the mitzvah. Not hidur mitzvah in the sense of something extra, but actually part of the mitzvah. We're just doing a better mitzvah here. Now, this would then lead to a final question, and this will we'll spend our last few minutes on. Why would Hanukkah in particular have this idea of being mahadrin achar ha-mitzvot? It seems like a generally good thing to do, right? Don't we all be mahadrin achar mitzvot? Like, seems like a basically good category to be part of. So why in Hanukkah in particular would we say that there's actually built-in categories of mahadrin achar mitzvot? And I think there's at least two possible answers, and maybe some of you will think of some others. So one, very balabatish, but in this case I mean balabatish in a good way. That Hanukkah was, we were denied the ability to do mitzvot. So Hanukkah is a good time to be mahadrin achar mitzvot. Right? This is a time where mitzvot were at stake. This is the whole question. Would we be able to do mitzvot? And if we can, and we have the ability to do mitzvot, then now is the time to celebrate by being mahadrin achar mitzvot. That's the threat. That's our celebration. Our celebration is lahader achar mitzvot on Hanukkah. So nowhere else do we say that, that here's the basic mitzvah. But if you really want to chase mitzvot, do the following. But here, built into it is, look, here's the basic mitzvah. Of course, everyone should light a Hanukkah candle. But if you're feeling like, you know, I'm really, really grateful that this time of year, when we're thinking about the historical events, we have the opportunity to do mitzvot, we get that. And so built into the system is mehadrin achar mitzvot, mehadrin mina mehadrin achar mitzvot. I think that's one really good, compelling answer. Another one may be, and this will be the last thought I throw out here, that built into the story of Pach HaShemen, the story of the Nes of the menorah, the Nes of Hanukkah, and conceptually, I think this is very important, built in also to the historical story. In other words, a story that we tell in Al HaNisim, which doesn't mention the Nes Pach HaShemen, or the story that we get elsewhere about the war in and of itself. Conceptually, these two share something very, very important. And I think this is actually the Mechaneh Meshutaf, or the Tzad HaShaveh here, between the story of the war and the story of Nes Pach HaShemen. Different sources emphasize one or the other of those stories, but fundamentally they share the same basic idea, which is that even when it seems absurd to even do something, just try. Just try. And this is a general human problem, right? Because you look at the world, you can look at today's world, you can think of specific events, or you can just look at the world in general and human life in general. You realize, like, the world's huge. I'm puny. There's no way that what I'm going to do is going to be meaningful. There's just nothing I can do. And that can lead to all sorts of philosophical conclusions, including nihilism, which is not a crazy conclusion to come to. Because after all, what can I do? Like, I literally can do virtually nothing in the world. So what's the point of it if we can't do very much? If I can't fundamentally change the world, if I can't substantively affect anything, then should I even bother doing anything? And there are a number of answers to this question, even within the Jewish thought, and I'm not going to go through very many of them, but I will mention that that's, of course, the famous Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon and Navot, lo alecha amlacha ligmor, right? You're not going to finish it. Don't expect to finish it. V'lo ata ben chorin li batel mimena. But you're not free to desist either. Now, to be honest, that's a great line. I think it's a fundamentally profound line. It also is not an answer to the question. It's a formulation of the question. But it raises as many questions as it answers. There is, you know, a famous Zen story about a couple of kids who are on the beach and see thousands of sea stars who have been beached on the sand, who are going to die of dehydration. And one kid starts throwing them back in. Another kid says, "Look, what difference are you making? Like, you know, there's thousands of them. So you threw one back in." And the first kid says, "Well, yeah, but it made a difference to that one that I threw back in," which I think is also a profound comment on this, that you might not change everything. Maybe you'll change one thing. And that, I think, is actually similar to the lesson of Hanukkah with an additional twist on Hanukkah. Because the point of the story of the war, the Rabim Be'ad Ma'atim, and the menorah, light the candle the first day. The Hashmonim had no idea what was going to happen, but they lit one night. Who knows? And the lesson might be, look, I have no idea. I don't know what's going to, I don't know that this is going to work. All I can do is try, right? So that little light might just be the spark that winds up lighting up the world. So Hanukkah is a good time to be mahader achar mitzvot. Like, light one extra candle. Because you never know which one's actually going to change the world. So maybe it's not the first candle. Maybe it's not the first menorah. Maybe, you know, we're lucky enough to have lots and lots of candles on the last night. Maybe the first four menorot, even though we're now dealing with, like, you know, 40 candles, that's not maybe enough. Maybe it's the fifth menorah that's going to work. Maybe it's that last candle. Be mahader achar mitzvot. Because it's not the first candle that does it. Maybe it's the seventh candle. Maybe it's not the parents' menorah. Maybe it's the child's extra menorah. But Hanukkah is a time to be mahader achar hamitzvot. Chase the mitzvah because you never know which of those mitzvot is the one that might actually matter. Of course, you know, Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha, would say, well, each one mattered. Each one built a brick. And maybe in some cosmic sense, that's true also. But I think the lesson of Hanukkah is that it's not that every single one will change the world. That seems almost crazy to say, right? I'm living in a different reality if I think every mitzvah has changed the world. But I never know which mitzvah will change the world. I never know which little action, which seems to be just throwing in one more sea star into the ocean, is actually the one that's going to change the world. So Hanukkah is a good time to say, like, you know what? I could just get away with one candle, but let me light an extra one. It's part of the mitzvah, right? It's not hidur mitzvah. It's not additional. This is part of the mitzvah. This is a time where you say, like, I'm going to light extra candles. I'm going to be mahader achar hamitzvot, because it might just be that extra candle that winds up lighting up the world. All right. Whew. I'm going to end there.
Yeshkov, I want to add one thing because there are 2 minutes left still. I remember years ago when I was in yeshiva, I think what you're saying, that last point, very nice, is the answer that I read in an article in David Hartman, Rabbi David Hartman, gave to why there are 8 days for Hanukkah, the famous question of the Beit Yosef. The miracle was only 7 days. Why is the festival 8 days? So he said the first day is that they lit the candle. Why? What's the point of lighting the candle? The Beit HaMikdash wasn't ready. You light candle for one night, and the next night there won't be anything left. Well, what kind of idiot does something like that? You wait till you have everything in line, and then you do it. So the miracle was they lighted. He compared it to Ben-Gurion announcing, of course, the disgrace of the State of Israel. Yeah, we don't have peace yet, unfortunately, but we have to do what we have to do. So I thought that point that you said, you know, you're brilliantly ties into that.
Very nice. Thank you, Scott.
Okay, thank you very much. I see there's one question in the chat box. I think why Purim? If you have 30 seconds or 1 minute to answer that, why also on Purim if you want to get to Bersume Nisa? I think that was the question. And of course, Rabbi Kohler, last book, he gave a 6-part series on Megillat Esther, which is well worth listening to a couple years ago before Purim here on Zoom. But anyways.
And if you listen to it, you should contribute to Rabbi Kellman.
Okay. Okay.
No, let's set that aside, I think. Purim and Hanukkah do have, I think they have deep commonalities, but also complement each other ideologically in a profound way. And very, very different in interesting ways that I think frame, you know, we were talking beforehand about diaspora, people in my family who chose to live in Eretz Israel, people who still live in the diaspora. And Hanukkah and Purim are actually do complement each other in that way. Hanukkah is very different ideologically in the land of Israel than in the diaspora. But I think I'll set that aside for today.
I have a question for you. Do you think you can apply your to be mahader achar to chase for something can be applied to Sukkot, chasing after the Arba Minim?
Well, it's hard to argue with the idea of chasing after mitzvot in general. The text really only uses the word mahadrin only about Hanukkah, which is, I think, what makes it so interesting. So, you know, the Braita there in Shabbat actually talks about lulav na'eh, sukkah na'ah. So that's sort of classic hidur mitzvah. Right.
So it's not. Okay, thank you. That's very much.